Live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
So you obviously have been watching the story, 95 Libyan nationals who were apprehended at a suspected military training camp. Lots of details still to come. They were scheduled to stand in court today, and you know, we were supposed to hear charges of the particular case. So there was a delay, and so we'll get clarity on all of that and why it was such a difficult day for the police today. But I want to get in Ian Cameron, who's a chairperson of the Portfolio Committee of the Police, on the line with us. Thank you so much for making time for us, Ian, and good evening and welcome.
Good morning,
sir. It's already been a long day.
Yeah. I'm ready for the next one.
Absolutely.
Good evening.
Absolutely. Look, you know, the last time I spoke to you, you were on the other side. You are a member of the public, very concerned about the crime elements in the country and so on. And now you sit as a chair of this portfolio committee. When you look at what we are looking at here, lots of things that you've raised before about concerns with the police, intelligence being one of them. I mean, that we are sitting here discussing a suspected military training camp that was disguised as a security training facility with all the paperwork and the facility that was registered. It speaks to that intelligence that you've been talking about.
Yeah, I think it speaks on a few levels of intelligence. So let's start on ground level intelligence. It's worrying to know that in terms of police capacity and crime intelligence specifically, something like this wasn't picked up sooner. Mm. Something with that kind of scale is not developed overnight. I mean, if you look at the pictures and the videos of the specific site where the so-called training was happening, you can see quite a bit of effort was put in order to prepare the landscape for whatever the training was going to entail. Mm. Now, if you go on to the next level, and I'm skipping a few now, but if you go to the State Security Agency, I think that is the major, major red flag to me, because if you've got 95 Libyan nationals coming into South Africa for so-called security training, whether they gave a false description or not, that should already raise red flags, especially considering issues regarding military action, specifically in and around Libya over the last few decades. And that wasn't picked up at all. Obviously, I mean, in terms of the police, there are a few question marks, but generally speaking, I think the State Security Agency has been found extremely lacking in this matter.
You make the point about the profile of these individuals. When you look at what's happening in Libya, you know, they are from Libya. Then the kind of route that they took, also going through Tunisia, claiming to be students. So at that level, before we even get to the site, we should have had intelligence that was preparing itself to do something at the airport to maybe check them again, you know, and see whether these really are students. Your take on that?
No, absolutely. You see, there's more to it than just checking if they're students. So firstly, they should have checked that. But just regarding the security training, where the red flags comes in, if you were to get technical about it, the specific training institution that they were going to is, according to my knowledge, only registered for up to a Serial Level C. And so the two highest experience or most complex Serial courses, which is Level A and B, aren't even registered there. So why would you be sending Libyan nationals via the strange route that they took to South Africa for basic, basically shop guarding services? It just simply doesn't make sense. It's in complete contradiction to the description of the training institution as well. If you go and Google them or look up any kind of description of them, it simply doesn't match the very basic serial registration that they have. And now, if you consider that, along with the fact that they came from Libya, along with the fact that they took a stranger, and along with the fact that SSA were meant to pick it up, there are just too many things that don't make sense. And I'm afraid the question that we need to ask, and I spoke with some of the police portfolio committee members earlier this evening, before I thought it was tomorrow morning already, they also say that, you know, the big worry is there maybe more? Are there more of these places that we don't know of?
Yep.
And I think this is the major concern.
Yeah. And they say, and obviously we wouldn't know that for sure right now, but the community says they themselves raised alarm bells. And then one would then ask the question, why does it take so long? Why would the community be, you know, raising alarm bells and nobody doing anything about it? 95 individuals is not a small number. You can't miss them.
No, yeah, it has a major impact. I mean, in a space like White River, I mean, White River is only so big.
Yes.
It's not a big town. And so just if you consider that specific area, of course, there are going to be a lot of question marks. I think, you know, there's a general problem with regards to urgency with some of these matters. And it's something that I've picked up from the new police minister, that he seems to be very concerned about the fact that, you know, there are things that have been raised before over and over again. And whether it's something like this or a different kind of crime issue, it's almost as though, you know, it was kind of left on the back burner until a crisis pops up, and then it would get some attention. For now, it's still early days, but from what I'm hearing from the new minister and his team, is there's a seriousness about turning the tide and making sure that things are taken seriously. But in this specific case, again, you know, it makes you wonder when we look back at the 2021 riots, so the damage that was done to KZN. There were many, many flags raised before those riots occurred, and no one took them seriously. So we must ask, who is steering this, and why are they not taking it as seriously as they should?
So you've raised a few questions that you will be putting forward in that portfolio committee as the chair of the portfolio committee of the police. I suppose you're also going to be asking some questions as you sit in the portfolio committee of CIRA as well. They've got some things to answer to.
Yeah, so CIRA already reached out to us yesterday and said they would like to speak, which is very positive because it tells me that they are taking it seriously. I think, you know, one would like to see that they have the capacity and the motivation to actually do these types of site visits before these types of incidents happen. But the fact that they've already reached out tells me that they are taking it seriously. So we will see, you know, as soon as we can confirm it, Parliament's in recess at the moment, or it will be from early next week. So then we will be able to confirm the date soon and get together. But yeah, CIRA will definitely be part of the discussion. I know that regarding the Intelligence Committee, there's already discussions on many questions that need to be answered there. And then I think from a crime intelligence point of view, it's very important that this doesn't just get pushed over to the State Security Agency, but that there's a joint responsibility. And the fact that crime intelligence and the police, generally speaking, didn't pick anything up is something that we need to talk about. Because if it could happen this easily with this, then what about all the other missed opportunities? And remember that in a place like White River, as an example, that specific area has a major challenge with regards to arms trafficking, cash in transit heists, the whole dynamic between cash in transit and rhino poaching. So there's a huge problem with very serious priority crimes there. And if you consider that along with this type of issue, if those two things were to get into contact with each other, we might have a far more serious problem than what we realize.
The issue of, you know, all these agencies aligning the efforts, I think, is a big one, and detective work. So, yes, I see we've apprehended 95 individuals, but the owner of the facility was not arrested on a technicality, which does concern me, because it speaks to also how strong is our detective work. You know, it is one thing to get them all in court today, and then before you know it, we really don't have sticking charges, and we're not able to get to the real kingpin. You know, your thoughts on that?
Well, so I'm going to say, generally speaking,
yes, of course, because
other cases I think you're spot on. I think there's a challenge with regards to making sure that the correct charges are pressed. Mm. Sometimes it feels like we've been very kind of superficial quick. With regards to the charges. We're too quick just to get something to court, and then bail is very easily granted. I don't see enough of a fight being put up to stop bail. You know, just before you and I started speaking, I was speaking to a community member in Elsie's River in the Cape Flats, and they've got a huge, I mean, last week I think four people were shot and killed there. And if you go and listen to the stories and you go and look at the cases, so many of the gang members involved in these shootings, you know, go in for very serious charges, and within a day or two they back out again on bail to do what they're doing. So I must ask, is there an integrated effort between the prosecuting authority and the police? And then we must ask whether the correct charges are being laid. Because this morning I was at the Lentegeer police station, also in the Cape Flats, and it was encouraging to hear that they are now looking at how they can better integrate their approach. And they gave me several examples about how they are now approaching making sure that they get the correct charges to book these guys on. But unfortunately, at the moment, there's a large issue all around South Africa that bail is just very, very easily given. And many people use it as an excuse, and they say, you know, bail is complex, but I just think it's not good enough. How is it fair to ordinary, innocent South Africans to have to then bear the brunt because of a system that is not at the moment serving the way that it should?
When we look at crime stats, it's very easy to talk about, you know, this has been reported, we were able to arrest this number of people, and even the dismal numbers of how many murders are solved in this country, which I think is under 20%, is quite shocking. But it's going to be quite difficult, and I suppose we need to get to a point where we all agree on how do we measure crime intelligence? How do we measure the milestones? Because we want to prevent the crime before it actually happens. And sometimes, you know, you foil something that's not tangible. You know, so what are your thoughts, just from your own experience, about where we need to begin with tackling this crime intelligence that is so required?
Yes, I think there's a mindset change that needs to happen with regards to the managing of policing in South Africa in general. We still have this very heavy top-down approach of, you know, high visibility, low-value arrests, high amount of low-value arrests. You know, we're arresting drug users and not the big dealers. We're not targeting kingpins. And I'm also encouraged, I feel motivated about the last 2 weeks where we've seen major breakthroughs with regards to arresting kingpins. Now, you know, now we need to keep them behind bars, but at least it seems like something is happening with that regard. But, you know, we need to change our approach to evidence-based and intelligence-based policing. It's not only to stop it before it happens, but it will also enable us to better identify how we can, figuratively speaking, chop off the snake's head. You know, there's no use in us arresting someone with a small bag of meth or lately in the Cape Flats, cocaine, in Yope, in other parts, you know, whatever it might be, and we're arresting that person, and it's a very low-level arrest, but the supply is increasing by the day, you know. There's a book I'm listening to at the moment regarding intelligence-based policing, and all the evidence around the world indicates to us that this high visibility approach is simply not effective in the long term, because criminals literally just hang back. They watch whatever uniform members are doing. They change their modus operandi.
And they spot them.
And just exactly. Yeah. And they just continue doing what they do. So you're absolutely spot on, but it's a mindset change that we need to make. Too much, I still hear certain politicians talking about needing boots on the ground. Mm. And, you know, it makes me sick to hear that, because the problem is you can bring in another 100,000 cops. It's not necessarily going to solve the problem. And then lastly, I don't always think we've got such a shortage of resources. Mm. I think there's a problem in terms of how we manage the existing resources. Mm. And if we just start doing that better, then already things can improve.
You've spoken slightly, just as you guys were discussing the budget, about the wellness of the police. You know, your thoughts on what has to be done. We were told for some time that, you know, yes, it's there, but the police are reluctant to come up and say, you know, I need help, I'm not okay. Your thoughts on what actually needs to be done to take this very seriously?
Yeah, so it's certainly not there, and it's certainly not there on the level that it needs to be, and it actually should be compulsory and taken that seriously. The trauma that cops in South Africa are exposed to is extreme. It's extreme compared to many other parts of the world. There are certain parts in South Africa where nearly every single day you see at least one dead body. And, you know, some people might laugh it off, and so you get used to it. I'm telling you, over the long term, it has a massive effect on the mental well-being of those cops. Mm. And if you then work under a political appointment or someone that doesn't have the experience or the training that they need to be in a commander's position, it makes it extremely challenging to have someone that actually relates to the trauma that you're experiencing. Mm. So I think a lot more should be done regarding that. When we look at, for example, detectives in South Africa, they don't even get overtime, never mind other kinds of support, and they work under immense stress. So, you know, we're losing a lot of these cops almost monthly at the moment, at the rate at which some of them are retiring early or simply resigning and leaving the police because of the pressure under which they work. So, a lot more needs to be done. I think it's something that shouldn't just be said to make things sound nice. I think very often we speak about the mental well-being and so on because it's kind of become buzzwords across the world with regards to looking after police or law enforcement agency members in general. It is something that we need to take far more seriously. And again, it's a mind shift that we need to make, that our leadership in police should be serving the cops on the ground and not the other way around. It needs to be a servant leadership type of approach. And again, I listened to the new minister last week in Hanover Park, and it was interesting that when some of the cops complained, they were very mild about their complaint. Mm-hmm. And then he actually said to them, please don't sugarcoat. Please tell me the truth.
Yeah.
And
they seemed almost a little embarrassed. I got the sense that it wasn't even about themselves. It was about a building, for goodness sake. And they couldn't even utter the fact that the building is falling apart. It was almost like a shame to that.
Yeah, it's a shame and fear. I can promise you, under the previous minister, if they said that, you know what I was told to do. So I think many of the cops would have faced the same face. There's no chance that they would have been able to raise an issue like that. So it's good to see that there is an interest in asking these questions. The challenge will now be to make sure that within the South African Police Service management, the actual operational management, it's taken as seriously as well, and that there's a humbleness amongst leaders to actually listen and support cops on the ground.
Hmm. MP Ian Cameron, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee of the Police.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.